So welcome back to Behind the Circulation Desk. I'm Jimmy Mott.
I'm Shelby Slay.
And I think it's been about a week since we were last here.
Yeah, it's pretty close to a week.
Got the 4th of July coming up tomorrow, which is going to be fun. Do you do anything big for the 4th of July?
This year we're not doing anything big. No. We used to have like a yearly party, but you know, just it's so much work.
It is a lot of work.
I love people, but not that much. It's so, oh my gosh, it's so hot.
It's ridiculously hot. Are you going to go out and do the fireworks thing or anything
like that? We probably won't for this year.
No?
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. It's just no. So I'm going to a barbecue tomorrow. And that's about it. They're booting everybody out of there at 8 o'clock because they still have to go to work the next day.
That's probably most of it this year. It's just random.
Then it might be raining tomorrow.
That's what I've heard. Today's supposed to be the bad day, and then tomorrow.
Yeah. Last year, you remember that? It was the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Flooding everywhere.
Oh, that's right. I forgot we had the flooding that went with it last year, too.
So,
welcome to Houston, right?
Welcome to Houston. Speaking of which, I'm back in Houston from my trip to Mexico City. Mm-hmm. That was fun.
You had some great photos.
Thank you.
There
was a lot of cool things out there. I celebrated my birthday doing the whole Lucha Libre wrestling matches. That was pretty fun.
Well, if you're not following him, at the Bearded Librarian 11, right?
Yes, I think so. I think it's at the Bearded Lib.
Oh, that's right. Bearded Lib 11.
Yeah, something like that.
He's got great photos on there from his Mexico City trip. You have to see them.
Yeah, and it was pretty cool. It was a very enlightening trip. I had a lot of fun. Met a lot of cool people. I got to go to the ballet, the folklorico dances. That was the folk dances from all across Mexico. That was real fun. A lot of restaurants, a lot of food. I severely broke my diet. I was telling Shelby earlier that I just feel absolutely disgusting.
You're on vacation, though. Yeah. You can't hold yourself to a diet on vacation.
You really can't, but it was just now I got to get back to work.
Now, did you have true, authentic Mexican food while you were down there? Like, actually
Street tacos.
Okay, good.
Street corn. So many restaurants that were just amazing. And it was super cheap because the dollar goes a long way in
Mexico.
That's
my favorite part about Mexico is the food.
I think I spent like $6 on 5 tacos, this agua fresca that was actually very fresca. It was very fresh. And $6.
Did that one have fruit in it?
Yep.
What fruit did it have?
Strawberry.
Oh, my gosh.
But see, that's the thing.
Jealous.
Over here, fresca. They'll tell you, like, we have Jamaica, watermelon, pineapple.
The watermelon's my favorite.
Horchata, and that's it.
Yeah.
Over there, they're like, what kind of fruit do you want?
Yeah.
And that's what's truly amazing about it. It was great.
I can't do the horchata yet.
No?
I can't do it. No.
It's too sweet, though.
It's way too sweet, and the milk with it.
No,
it's kind of milky.
Yeah,
no.
It is.
It freaks me out.
Yeah, I used to love it when I was not into fitness. not so much. I can't have the stuff. But I did have it in Mexico City while I was on vacation.
I gotcha.
So I got one of my summer reading books done.
Mm-hmm.
That was the Haruki Murakami's Men Without Women.
And you finished Anne Frank too, right?
I finished Anne Frank's
the graphic novel.
Graphic novel adaptation. I was satisfied with the graphic novel adaptation. Again, very sad, especially the last image that they include in that book.
Gotcha.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yep, I know exactly.
Yeah, and I'm not going to spoil it for you, but it's such a powerful image, and it kind of makes you just stop and have to reflect on, you know, your own kind of life, the things that are great about it, and also some of the things that are happening in our country that reflect what was going on during this era.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary. And Men Without Women, I was a little disappointed at the end of that book.
That's what you said. Yeah.
And the reason is because Murakami does such a great job telling stories. And all of these stories that he told about all of these men going through their experiences of, you know, dealing with the absence of women, whether it's romance or whether it's, like, professional or et cetera, right? Really makes you look at yourself as a male and discover, like, why is it that, you know, men in our society in particular don't share their feelings, don't go out of their way to talk about things, etc. And then you get to the end of just like this very inspiring, very like thought-provoking book, and it just feels like he called it in. Just phoned it right on in.
I think he was just ready to be done. One of those.
Yeah. And the book wasn't very long either. It was like 200 some odd pages, but if you look at the typeset and the way the book was kind of like situated, I hate to say this, but it feels like if the publisher was pushing him to get something out.
Yeah.
Just so they can make a sale on it. And
I hate when that happens. Yeah, you know, when you have a great first couple of books from somebody and then they just
rush. This guy has multitudes of yeah. books. So it's not like he could have, you know, it's not like he was hard up for it. He could have just, you know, held back and did a really good job with it. But that's really the only book that I've had with this that I've experienced.
Did you read Armada?
I have not.
That's, I felt like that one was another rush to repeat, you know, and it just, it kind of let me down. It was still a good book. It just kind of let me down.
Right.
So my summer reading, I've totally gone off the deep end in terms of mine and just left my list be pretty much. And I did finish Origin.
That's awesome, though.
I told you I could just, I hated the ending.
Yeah?
Yes. I feel like he went too light at the ending. Didn't really want to get too touchy on the subject matter at hand.
Yeah. Well, that's frustrating. I mean, he's already written an entire book on it. Why cop out at the end?
Exactly. And that was one of my biggest problems. Still a good book, you know, entertaining, but I felt like at the end it just, he just went way too light and just left us all going, really? This is it?
The Game of Thrones?
not a total Game of Thrones. I have my own thoughts, feelings, and I can't. It's still too sensitive. Still too sensitive. For those of you that liked the ending, more power to you, but oh man.
Yeah.
It's still way too sensitive. Gross. I devoted so much time.
I calculated it. You want to know exactly how much time we spent on the series? That's 3 days.
Okay.
And 16 minutes.
Is that just if you watched it one time?
That's just if you watched it one time.
All the way through?
All the way through.
Yeah, I devoted way more time than that because I've definitely watched episodes more than once. Mm-hmm.
So they owe us at least 3 days and 16 minutes.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Apparently, there's some people out there that are rewriting the ending.
Really?
There are different fans out there, you know, doing some fan fiction and rewriting the ending.
I'm going to have to read some of that fan fiction.
I know. I'm interested in it, too.
Decide which one of them I accept as canon.
Yeah. So... Like
that's
I said,
a disappointment, though. I'm sorry that the book didn't end that well.
That's all right. It happens. And I think that's kind of why I shifted from my list. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes when you have an experience and you're like, oh, what was I thinking picking up these other books? I think that's part of the reason why I shifted. I went back to some old favorites that I knew. And then on top of that, after we left our last podcast, I went into Target because, you know, that's what we do. We go into Target and just buy things to buy them. But...
Just going in there for chapstick.
I went in for chapstick and spent $500. No. But I was in the book section back there, you know, with the electronics and everything. And they had The Handmaid's Tale, the graphic novel.
That's awesome. Yeah.
And,
you
need
to send me a picture of that.
I've read The Handmaid's Tale, seen the first season. Mm-hmm. I haven't watched any more than that. And like, you know, I was telling you the other day, I think it's mostly because I want to read her sequel that's coming out first and then go from there.
I think her sequel is called The Testaments.
I think so. I think it's Testaments.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. It comes out in September, right when this video game is coming out, so I'm going to do some juggling. But,
oh, man.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one, not necessarily because of the story following the main character, who, yes, I know her name is June in the show.
Yeah.
That is not her name in the book.
No.
Margaret Atwood doesn't give her a name. I'm sticking by that argument.
Just holding to it.
Yeah, holding to it. She
because
has no name.
You've seen... Almost all three seasons.
Right,
of...
I'm in the middle of season three right
okay.
now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that's
bleak.
Really?
Totally bleak. Yeah, and I get it. I understand it's a bleak situation that these women are in, that this whole, you know, country, you know, of ours is in. And I get it, but it's just, it kind of like lets me question, how much would I be able to take living in that kind of society? How much turmoil, how much conflict, how much anxiety can the human mind withstand on a daily basis? Do you even get used to that?
That's true.
You know, and if you do get used to that,
could you ever?
Right.
That's the thing. It's
exactly.
It's could you ever? Or are you totally?
Yeah.
You know, have you totally sold yourself?
But with regards to that, though, I was going to go back to my original point. I'm looking forward to that book because I want to see how the world in that environment, in that story, in that setting, has evolved. Because I'm more interested in the Civil War aspect of it all than June's story. It's like kind of like, you know, during the show, it's like, oh, they're talking about, you know, taking back a city. And I'm like, yeah, I don't care, June, enough about that. Tell me about the city. How's that battle going?
Yeah.
You know, because I'm curious more about the environment, the world that's going on around it. So I'm hoping The Testament's off.
So do they get into more detail once you go into the second season of the show about it?
Yeah,
okay.
About the whole country.
Because that was my whole, while you're reading it, you know, and they keep referencing different things about the battles going on within. And again, it's been, it's been years since I read the original book, the novel. Yeah. But the graphic novel stays pretty true to form. Okay. And I'll tell you, within the graphic novel, they did a great job emphasizing the red within there. You know, there's still other colors. It's not just black, white, red.
I flipped through that book, and I like the art style. Mm-hmm. Because the art style is very, I think it's oil.
I think so.
Yeah, and I'm not an artist, so don't quote me on that, for those of you listening.
Yeah, we are not.
Kind of heretic about, you know, how we talk about art. Yeah. But that
I'm real
art,
good with stick figures. That's about it. Yeah, that's the extent of my art.
Like, I'll draw this amazing fox head that's a stick figure. That's about it.
That's it. He's got a head, but his body is a stick.
Non-existent, yeah. But that art is similar to this one graphic novel, Silent Hill. Mm-hmm. It's an adaptation of the video game, which also has a movie. For those of you who are thinking, like, no, it's not a video game, it's a movie. That comic was real stylistic, just like the Handmaid's Tale. So okay. If you guys are into graphic novels out there listening and you want to go pick this up, the Silent Hill graphic novel adaptation, I forget the publisher, I'll have to look that up.
But I've seen
it's brilliant.
The graphic novel. I haven't picked it up to read, but I have seen
it. It's real scary. That whole game, genre, movies are all terrifying. If you haven't, do you play video games?
I've played some in the past. I'm just getting into the Nintendo Switch a little bit more now.
That's awesome.
I have an obsession with the Monopoly game on Nintendo Switch.
Is it good?
Oh my gosh, it's so much fun.
I've never played board games on video games.
I mean, serious fun.
Okay.
Yeah, you have to.
Does it like make you better player in real life?
I don't know if it makes you a better player, but it's, you know, it's fun, and it's fun beating your kids.
Yeah. I mean, no doubt. Because there are some video games that if you play the video game version of it, it makes you a better player.
That's true. And I'll tell you, I'm a ruthless player. I am not one of those parents that just, like, lets my children win. Or
spank them.
Even with, but even with, like, my students here at school,
yeah,
you're not just going to beat me to beat me. Like, no. You have to actually...
Exactly.
I'm going to play.
You have to earn it.
Yeah, you got to earn the win.
Yeah, no, I'm like that too.
I think it's years of athletics.
Like,
you got to earn the win.
They're just kids. I'm like, no.
No, you got to, you know, grit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I have an Xbox in the library. I have one particular game that I won't mention because I should not be allowing kids to play that in the library, even during lunch. But one of the kids was like, hey, Mr. Maya, do you want to play with me? And I was like, yeah, sure. And he was a little sore about it. You know, I could tell he was expecting to...
Sore about the loss?
About the many losses, yeah. And I told him, I said, hey, man, you can't come in here like that and expect to win.
Yeah, but I'm not just going to give you a freebie here.
I've been playing
here.
This game since, like, the early 90s, homeboy.
Yeah. The big one here for us is Smash Brothers right now.
Smash Brothers is huge.
Yeah, Smash Brothers. We even had a club. We had Smash Brothers Club that met in the library on Friday afternoons.
We had that
with
during
D&D.
Field day.
Mm-hmm.
8-player Smash mode. It was chaos.
Yeah. And they love it.
Yeah.
And I'm all for it.
I love it too. Like, I'm very good at people who are my age. There's a couple of friends who will whoop me every time.
Yeah.
But against those kids with this game, no, I can't.
Oh, no. There are certain ones I can't hang.
They'll wipe the floor with me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what were we talking about?
Oh.
Our summer reading.
We're on our summer reading list. Okay. So you...
That's right, The Handmaid's Tale. Yeah.
So finished The Handmaid's Tale. And then I went back to some oldies, but goodies. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, they're not really that old. I've just read them before. I read The Poetex again.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That was a good one.
Oh, my gosh. I love that book.
Did you see that on Twitter? One of those. Someone, like, stole her.
I did.
Her image.
Yes. And that's, you know, I'm still waiting to hear. Have they said anything from the publisher? Last I read,
no.
Publisher hadn't commented. Mm-hmm. I saw a tweet from Acevedo, though, where she, you know, was apologizing, but I don't think we've heard from the publisher yet,
no.
So I'm waiting to hear on that one. Absolutely love that book. That's one of those I read, listened to the audiobook, and if you haven't listened to the audiobook, it's fantastic. However, I would suggest, just because I'm one of those people, I listened to it at a faster speed, and for me, I listened to it at 1.5, and it almost sounded like she was rapping all the poetry the whole way through.
That's cool.
Oh my gosh, it was great. And then I read it again.
Yeah.
Just because it's one of those, it's such a like quick, easy, good book.
Okay.
And it's one that is on the 9th grade summer reading list for our kids here at school, and I'm so glad our teachers put that on there.
I'm really excited.
They made
about
a very conscious effort to give kids books that they thought that they would be interested in reading, versus hey, we've done, you know, To Kill a Mockingbird for 15 years. You're going to read To Kill a Mockingbird.
And that's what I just disdain about. I guess the situation that we're in as you know, librarians, as educators, is this continuing desire, almost stubborn hard-headedness, if you will, to stay with the classics.
Yeah.
And yes, there are graphic novel adaptations to a lot of these things. Yes, we have audiobooks now. Yes, we have movies. Yes, we have video clips. Yes, we have these book trailers, etc. That's cool, but we really need to give kids the agency to be able to pick something that they resonate with.
Yep. And yes, these classics, there are some wonderful classics out there that they read. We're not saying anything against that.
Not taking away from that at all.
We need to give them the option to find a book, like you said, that resonates with them and their life and being able to see themselves within the pages.
I mean, come on, we're competing with technology. We're competing with instant gratification.
Yep.
And you're expecting a kid to go back and sit down with To Kill a Mockingbird and to really engage with it? No, you give them the choice to read whatever it is they want to read, and then when it comes time to hone in on those other classic skills and those classic sets and those classic pieces of literature, then they'll have the skills necessary to be able to engage in it and develop their own ideas. But right now, I feel like, yeah, choice is huge. Yeah. And the Poet X is definitely one of those.
Poet X is great. I picked up Dear Martin again, if you haven't read that one. That's by Nick Stone.
I've read that one.
Another
great
book. I picked that one up and read that one again. I kind of went through this phase there where, you know, I just wanted to read those books again that I knew were good reads. And I knew that at the end of the book, I'd be like, yep. Yeah. That was a good choice today. Another one that I hadn't read yet, but I'd heard fantastic things about is I picked up Wish Tree. It's more of a middle grade elementary read, but I loved it. Yeah. I mean, I flew through the book. And for those of you that haven't read it, you do need to pick it up. I had total tears at the end.
Really?
I mean, yeah, tears at the end, just because it's such a great ending and it's such a reminder for kids. You know, you have the whole empathy aspect that goes with it. You're feeling what the others within the book are feeling. And then at the end, it's kind of, I don't want to give the ending away, obviously, but you're left going, yep, everything's okay.
I meant to read that.
Yeah, it's such a great book. And the tree is hilarious because it's told from the tree's point of view.
Oh, that's cool.
It's hilarious.
I'm gonna check that out.
I just cracked up the whole time. The Beach Club was another one that I was going to read. I picked it up. Got like 20 pages into it and just set it down. I wasn't ready.
You know,
I just couldn't get into it.
If you're not into it, then don't push yourself. Yeah. It's summertime.
Get into it. Exactly.
We need to read what we want to read.
Exactly. I'm definitely one of those people, and I say the same thing to my students. You get 20, 30 pages into a book, you can't get into it, put it down. We'll find you something else.
Yeah.
You know, because there's certain times in your life that you want something specific.
Yeah, totally. There is another book out there that we weren't going to talk about it, but I'm just going to throw it out there and then we're going to move on. If you want a good tearjerker, you know what? I'm not even going
to
say it because
Jimmy,
I just spoiled it in that regard. So I'm not going to do what was. Yeah, no. Moving
just
on.
Just bringing up memories of the past.
I'm not going to talk about it.
That's going to have to be another day.
Yeah. Okay. You're right. I will talk about this book. I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter.
Oh, such
a
great book.
That one's a great book.
Oh, my gosh.
And if you're, you know, Latina, if you're a Mexican, you know, woman, go out and get this book.
That one and another one, Gabby, A Girl in Pieces.
Yes. Those two books right there. Phenomenal reads.
I don't even think you have to be of Hispanic heritage.
To appreciate
they're just wonderful
and
books.
And if you aren't a Hispanic heritage, you're definitely going to learn a lot of what it means to be Hispanic. Great books. I love Gabby, A Girl in Pieces. I loved I Am Not Your Perfect Mexican Daughter. And both of them just phenomenal reads. Mm-hmm. I would definitely pick those up. If you haven't, if you want a good lighthearted, I don't even know if I want to say lighthearted, but you're definitely going to have a fun time reading
these books.
They're a little heavy.
There's going to be some situations in there where you need to, it's not a step back that you're going to take, but you're hearing their story and you're hearing all of
and
their
there's
story.
Be definitely sometimes you have to think about the content of what's going on, but if you want to be entertained,
even
while you're reading this book, go read these two books. They're awesome.
Yeah, I will. I definitely had some tears.
Yeah.
In some of those.
Some good laughs.
You know, and for me, there were some good laughs.
Good laughs.
But, you know, for me, looking at them, I could see so many of my students.
Right.
And that, for me, was the big thing. And I think that's why I had tears within those books, because I'm looking at these and going, oh, my gosh, this is this person or this is that. And then, you know, we know our kids, but we don't know all of their home life. And you just have to sit there and wonder sometimes. And I think that was part of those books
pretty good,
for me.
I'm glad you mentioned that because there is an infographic. And for those of you listening right now, I am furiously trying to look it up on my phone right now. It was infographic on books and representations in children literature.
Oh.
I don't know if you saw
that. The one
that.
Where you see that the... the difference between the percentages of books that are out there for our kids. Oh, it's scary.
And it is scary because there's not a whole lot of representation for our students in the realm of, you know, what it is to be African American, Hispanic American, Asian, which infuriates me because, you know, as half Vietnamese, we often get lumped into other.
You do.
Asian slash other. And that ticks me off because, you know, what does that say to us about, you know, what does that say to us as a ethnicity? You know, like we're not important to be qualified. And anyway, that's besides the point. I could talk.
We could have multiple episodes. We might even have multiple episodes on that whole idea.
But the whole thing about it is that even to this day, even in 2019, with the advancements that we had, the many authors of, you know, who are minorities in this country have come, we're still lagging behind.
We are. Even with the whole push of we need diverse books and things
and
like that.
I found it interesting, and I'm going to put these infographics up on our Twitter so you can check it out. But even though our representation went up, it still didn't go up much as books with animals.
That's okay. That's the
funny
one
thing,
that,
isn't it?
What isn't that one like 25 or 30% in that
infographic? Exactly. Something
it was
along
number
those
two.
Lines. It was number two, and
on
that
list.
Just kind of like showed.
We're gonna have to pull that infographic up
yeah.
and just go over that
and
whole.
Just the audacity of like, wow, this country rather read about animals than it would about other. Children, other students, other young adults of different ethnicities, of different colors, of minority status. And that really ticked me off because it reminded me of, I'm going to get a little bit controversial here. There is a sign that was taken down in Texas that says it was to the degree of, you know, like when during racism, more racist times during segregation, it said no blacks, no dogs, no Mexicans.
Yep.
And
well,
it's
people
one of
often
those,
forget here in Texas, especially back then,
this
you know,
really,
what it meant to be
yeah,
a Hispanic culture.
Exactly. And, you know, just putting, you know, Mexicans beneath dogs was one of those things when I was a teenager in high school and I saw that and just kind of like how horrified I was about that. That really, that infographic really reminded me of that. And it's kind of, it's definitely going to make me want to go back this year and buy a lot of books for our Hispanic, Asian and African American students that say, hey, look, here's how we're represented in our, you know, in our literature, in our culture, you need to be aware of.
And, you know, and that's one of my things, and I know you and I have talked about this at length, is the fact that we need to push our publishers. As librarians,
right.
as bookstore owners, as
exactly.
anyone purchasing books, we really need to have that push towards our publishers.
And you know what?
In
I'm
making
glad you said
sure
that
we
yeah.
are representing and that they are out there. Not just, you know, supporting our authors, mm-hmm. but making sure that we are looking for the authors out there that,
right. that
represent
we're getting
all of
books,
our different.
That we're, yeah, that we're getting the hardbacks, we're getting the library bound. How many times have you gone on as a librarian to order books and you only find the paperback editions?
There are so many.
Hey, I want the library bound for this book too, you know, because I want this book to last a long time for our kids to read it. A paperback lasts what?
Maybe, oh.
That's being generous.
In my library, like maybe 6 months.
Yeah, that's
you
it.
You know, if it is a heavily checked out read, mm-hmm. and this is, so for the school that I was at previously, because I'm moving to a new high school next year. Mm-hmm. So the school I was at previously, we have a very high refugee population.
Right.
We have a number of Arabic students that have just come over in the last 3 to 4 years. And that was one of my big pushes this year, was making sure that I had titles for those students.
Right.
And you know this, that I went out and was searching high and low for Arabic titles that were available through the vendors that we have offered. And I don't know, maybe I found 30 this year.
Right.
I think it was about 30.
And that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Considering the fact that you can hardly ever find one title.
But what's
general.
Even crazier is there's series out there, right? Mm-hmm. But it's only you could get like number 3 and 4 in the series. I couldn't find 1 and 2, and I'm like, I can't just sit there and hand them, hey, here's number 3. You're going to have to figure out everything happened
Harry
beforehand.
Harry Potter and the Order of Phoenix.
Yes, but I can't find anything before that.
A lot of stuff happens before that book, but I guess you could do without.
But so the second I got those books in, they were checked out right away.
Yeah,
I mean,
I believe it.
Within 3 days, because mm-hmm. one student found out, and then they're telling another, and you know,
word of mouth, and next thing you know, they're all gone.
They're all gone.
You know,
and
when
the second one would come in, I would have someone waiting to pick up the hold.
The population that you have with students who you know speak Arabic or are you know Persian or from that region, you really ought to have about maybe 1,000 books available for these students to not only have choice, but to also increase the life of your books. And we just don't have that.
And what was great in a couple of them is it was side-by-side pages, Arabic and English.
Not only that, you increase the fluency of their English.
It's we have win-win. Kids reading. That's the win-win.
That's the whole thing about it. It doesn't matter what language you're reading in, so long as they're reading.
Yep.
I have a large Hispanic population at the middle school that I work at, and I have tons of ESL. Half of our population are ESL kids. A good chunk of those population of that population are kids who are here brand new to the country. They still want to read books. They're still very much impassioned about literature, but they can only read in Spanish.
Yep.
And yes, my Spanish collection is rather large, but it could be so much better. But I can't for the life of me get on these vendor sites and find the good books, the new books, the popular books that everybody wants to read in Spanish. Yeah, I found, you know, your Dork Diaries, your Diary of Wimpy Kids, the Divergent series, the Harry Potter, things like that. But hey, I'm not your perfect Mexican daughter in Spanish.
No. Nope.
Can't find it.
Yeah.
Thug. In Spanish?
Can't find it.
Can't find it. Dear Martin, in
Spanish?
Can't
find it.
Can't find it. And these are all relevant titles that these kids want to read, but for the life of me, I can't even get it in paperback in Spanish.
And I mean, it's getting better.
It is getting better.
We can't deny the fact that it's getting better. However, you know, that has to be one of the pushes from us as librarians, is the fact that we need these titles that relate to these kids.
Precisely. And we also need the titles not only that relate, but that are just popular and entertaining to read.
Exactly.
When I was visiting Mexico City, I found all of the books that me and you had been talking about, me and other librarians had been talking about, other teachers, my friends, all in Spanish. I found Margaret Atwood, Dan Brown.
And they're there.
Yeah, they're all there.
It's just hard to find sometimes with our specific vendors that we have to use.
Exactly. The titles exist. The books themselves exist. United States vendors need to do a better job at getting us those titles because we're failing our kids.
Yeah, and I think I think they are, but like you know we've talked about it. Just it needs to be more of a push from us and saying we have the money to purchase these titles. And that's another thing you know within our districts as well. Mm-hmm. We have to represent everyone and that's in our population, and that's a push from us to advocate for those kids. You know, yes, I can go out and spend $1,000 on graphic novels, but am I also spending $1,000 on Spanish and Arabic and all these different titles?
Exactly. There are even graphic novels. Mm-hmm. I went to this place, they called it Cafeteria. Cafe means coffee, breria, you know, comes from the word libreria, but it was a bookstore that had a cafe attached to it. Awesome bookstore, like four stories. On the bottom was the cafe, at the top was a bar. Our kind of place, right?
Yes.
But they had a wall, like I mean, like literally an entire wall of graphic novels that were all in Spanish. And I thought to myself how great that would be to have that at my school.
It would be amazing.
But I can't even get the basic ones.
Where's your funding?
I mean, exactly. Where's my funding?
Right? Where's your funding for that?
Where are my vendors?
Yeah.
You know, and as librarians, I think we need to push to get different vendors. Because I'm pretty sure, well, just to explain to some people who aren't librarians, every school district has an approved vendor list. That means we can only order from those vendors, those sellers that are approved by our district. So that means if we found it on, you know, someone else's website, we can't order it because they're not an approved vendor.
Yeah.
As librarians, we need to push for a wider list of vendors. We need to start getting the vendors who do have those books for us on our approved vendor list so we can start getting products from them.
And I know you're just like me. There are certain times that I'll even go onto Amazon, spend my own money.
Exactly.
Just trying to find the book that one of my students needs. Mm-hmm. You know, especially with my refugee population that came in, we had certain dialects that were spoken that there were no options. We're talking just a dictionary, you know? And I was having to go on and just search and search and search just to find at least one dictionary for our students.
Houston.
That's
living in one of the most diverse cities in the United States of America, probably if not one of the most diverse places, you know, in the world. And we don't have access to those sort of things. We don't have access. Our hands are tied.
Sometimes they are.
And we're just adding. And I know we hate to say this, but we're just adding to the not the illiteracy, that's not the right word, but the lack of readership.
Yeah. Well, that's what you were saying in Mexico City. It seemed like there were more readers there.
Right. Oh, in Mexico City,
there was large amounts. You said the bookstores were just packed.
On my street alone, Avenue de Juarez, there was 3 bookstores within, I want to say, 1 city block of each other.
That's amazing. I think about
one of them that belonged to the Palacio de Bellas Artes. That was the ballet's own bookstore. One of them was called Gandhi. That's the kind of like one of the chains that they have over there. Think of like our Barnes & Noble.
Okay.
And the other one was a used bookstore that was independently operated by, you know, an owner over there. And that was just my street.
It's crazy.
All over the city, there are bookstores all over the place. Not only that, they have multiple chains. We only have Barnes & Noble here now.
Yeah, because we've lost...
Borders.
Borders, that's right.
Yeah. And we have half-price books and we have our own independent booksellers. But in the city of Mexico, you're talking like, I can't even count how many bookstores. There was a bookstore at the park that had a tree growing inside of it. Wow. Opened out to this river that you could sit down and read your books. But the thing about it is, every single one of these stores I went to on any given day during the week was packed.
Yeah, and they're building a culture of readers.
They're building a culture of readers over there. And I want to know what the disconnect is with our society, you know, and partly it's due to these, you know, Amazon, you know, and we're all guilty of ordering from Amazon.
Of course we are, because sometimes that's the only place you can find the book you want.
Exactly. But that goes back into, in a sense of like, what are we, you know, in our profession, what are we doing to push that, to like push against that, to get other vendors here to sell us our books, books that we want for our students to read.
Very true.
And libraries are coming back in a big way.
Yes, we are.
No, we really are. Because let's face it, times are a little tough with as far as cash flow goes, and we can't always, you know, buy the books that we want to read. So the library is here to serve those needs. You know, I'll be honest with you, I've probably gone without food to buy a book. But, I mean, that's just me. For the rest of society who likes to eat, your libraries are the place. But in order for the libraries to truly be the epic centers, community centers, to be the place to go, we need to push our vendors.
Yeah. No, I feel you on that one. I was reading an article just the other day about there's a library. It's some town, I think it's in Indiana or Idaho, just kind of out in the middle of nowhere. And the library has the best Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And they said that people are just coming in droves to there. And they've even set up benches in little areas to gather. So when the library's not open, the people have the good Wi-Fi.
That's awesome.
I'll have to see where exactly it was. I think it was Idaho, if I remember correctly, but I'll go back and check.
That's pretty cool, though, because even if they're not going out there to check out books, they're still utilizing the resources that we have available. And eventually you're going to get a book because you're there and you're going to see something that tantalizes you. But no, that's amazing. I definitely want to learn about that.
I think especially with our libraries, just the reading of technology integrated with, you know, literacy and reading and all of those different things. There's amazing things happening in libraries right now.
Really quick, I want to touch about it, and it's kind of like a deviant topic, but we're talking about technology. Did you hear about what Microsoft is doing? Microsoft recently got into the whole ebook game.
Yes.
And what happened was that they got into this game, people were buying ebooks, people were buying these licenses, but now, 2 years later in 2019, they're suspending that service. And all the books that you bought, congratulations, you don't own anymore. Now,
that is correct.
To be fair to Microsoft, they are offering refunds. But if the credit card that you bought it with is not active or expired, you get Microsoft credit.
Yes, I did see that. I did see that.
I get that. You know, it's, you know, what can you do in that regard? Sure. But these digital licenses, we got to get some legislation to cover that, because...
Well, you know my feelings about... And I am a huge audiobook person. I love audiobooks. I mean, I'm one of those people that if I'm running, I'm listening to an audiobook. When I'm driving to school in the mornings, I'm listening to an audiobook. It's just... I love them.
It works. They help.
But, you know, I'm reading... And the same thing for us. You know, we buy these licenses so that our kids can use them. Well, you know, you only get 26 uses, or you only get it for 12 months. So you're purchasing these books over and over and over again. And we're not talking about cheap licenses.
No.
I mean, some of them
are like $60
are,
for 12 months.
Exactly. And what if someone, what if somebody doesn't check that out and you've spent $60?
And then it expires.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I really feel that we need to, as an organization, as a group of professionals, we need to start pushing legislation on that, because it's not right. It's not right because you bought something, you know. And I really feel this goes into all kind of media content. You bought something, it's yours. You know, we should be able to have ownership over it. Now, yeah. I'm not talking about streaming services. We
That's a totally different situation.
Music streaming, movie streaming, TV show streaming, we're paying for a service to be able to stream that. And in some regards, I'd rather spend $120 a year to get all music rather than buy 12
Well,
CDs.
Isn't Apple, now they're pulling iTunes?
Right.
So, right? Didn't I just read that the other day?
Yeah, I haven't heard about that.
I think you're keeping your music, but actual iTunes... Am I correct that it's partly going away? I'm going to have to look at that and do a little more research.
Regarding that concept, that's BS.
I've spent a lot of money on iTunes.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people have. And this gets into the issue of copyright and privacy, because people who see that are saying, you know what, well, screw it. They're screwing us. I'm going to screw you, and I'm going to go get this for free. I'm going to download this illegally, and I'm going to pursue these illicit forms of entertainment. Which doesn't necessarily, you know, affect anybody other than the creator. And what does that say to the creator? That your work is not important?
Mm-hmm.
It absolutely is.
It's not worth me spending, you know,
X amount of dollars. But that goes into the, I call them the shady practices of these companies with these media licenses. And especially for public libraries, school libraries, and university libraries who spend public dollars. Okay, let's not even go ahead and talk about the, you know, things like that. We ought to be able to have ownership over these things that we bought, you know. And I get it, if you want to restrict the license to one user at a time, I'm all for that. You know, the book is checked out digitally, you're going to have to get on that waiting list, you'll get it,
which is
turn.
The case. But again, you know, even the public libraries, imagine, okay, what was it, Becoming by Michelle Obama?
Uh-huh.
There was like a 7-month waiting list for people trying to get the book. And, you know, think about how many times, what is it, a 14-day checkout period?
Yeah.
Think about how many people are on that waiting list. And I have a 26, you know, person limit or reading limit or listening limit on that. And then that list is 100 people long.
Yeah. And then
think about how many times I'm having to buy that book over and over and over again.
And that's not right. So if you're listening and you didn't have any idea about this, that's the sort of thing that we have to deal with on the back end as far as, you know, the profession of librarianship goes. And that's where your public dollars are going.
Man, Jimmy, you're getting real political
in this
podcast.
One because, you know,
you're feeling hard on this one.
Yeah, my tax dollars are, you know, going to buy a book over and over and over again. I don't even do that in my personal life. If
are
I have
you listening
book,
to those books from the library?
Am I listening to the books from the library? Absolutely.
I am too.
Yeah.
I'm one of those people that's you know, using up those spaces.
But it's our right.
Yeah.
You know, it's our right as citizens of the city to be able to use that. But it's also our right to be able to tell these publishers, hey, no, we don't want that anymore. You know, and I encourage people to, like, you know, check out the physical copies of books because it does.
There's nothing better than
exactly.
a book in your hand.
Exactly.
Just the smell alone.
Just the smell alone. Now, if you ever catch us whiffing books, that's our deal. That's our prerogative.
The best is when the kids come in. They know. They can just smell.
They can smell the new books.
For those of you that are not librarians, you probably have never experienced this before. But there are literally times when we get new books in where the kids come in and they can smell the new books. I know it sounds weird, but it actually happens. We'll have kids come in and go, you got new books, didn't you? And I'm like... Yeah, they're like, I can smell them. I'm like, okay.
I have one of my library aides, sweet gal, whenever we get a new book order, and
she'd
open
the
box and she'd open up into the middle of the spine, just take a big whiff.
Yep.
Yeah, and I would
there
get upset
are book smellers
because,
out there.
Like, I wanted to do that.
Yeah. Most of us that are book snippers, we do exist.
So, yeah. But I wouldn't sniff the old books.
No, no. You'll get some dust in there and just wreaks havoc on your
it really does.
Sinuses.
It really does. So. Well, how did we get here?
I have no idea. I'm sure we went totally off topic multiple times, but you know, it is what it
fantastic.
Is.
Fantastic. But any future summer reads that you got going?
I got to start on PD pretty soon.
Yeah.
I know. We're at that
July
point.
July 3rd.
It's July 3rd. And you know, we have conferences coming up where we're presenting. So I gotta step up my game. God, yeah, think about that one. we're presenting, not just the two of us together, but with other librarians, with I can't let them down. We have Level Up coming up.
Level Up. We have our camp outs.
Yep, we have our It's Learning camp outs.
And then we have our on-campus PD.
Yeah. So for those of you that don't know It's Learning, it's our online learning management system, and Jimmy and I are trainers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rangers.
We're called Rangers, but it's like being trainers for the district to kind of get people using It's Learning and how to use it, give them basics, and then we go into the why, the how, the all the good things
and
that go with it.
All that good stuff. Shelby is a lot more competent at it than I am.
I don't know about that
one. I've gone off the rails with that. I need to get back into it.
But what other? We have something else coming up too that we're presenting at. New Librarians Academy.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
For our new librarians. Wow.
We have a lot coming up. I know. Man, I got to make a list for myself.
Oh my God. I just bought 8 books from Mexico City that I want to read.
Well, you can still read and.
Yeah. And prepare.
But we do have some PD books that we have to start reading.
We have to start reading that PD stuff.
Yeah.
All right.
There you go.
Well, thanks for joining us again today, guys.
Thanks for listening.
Hopefully we didn't go too
off topic.
Off topic. And that's going to happen. But we'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And
maybe even next week. We'll see.
Yeah.
Just with 4th of July coming up. And then I know you're traveling a little bit
again. Going to Kentucky for a few days, visit my sister over there. That's going to be fun. Looking at the cows and all that. Not a lot to do in Kentucky. But we'll be back, and thanks for joining us again.
Have a great week.
You guys take care. Record. And so we're back on here at this thing. We're just like,
blah, blah, blah. you've probably seen it. What's that Tilly show where they do the singing?
I don't know. American Idol?
No. It's a movie. It was a popular movie. Lord,
Pitch Perfect?
Pitch Perfect. Thank you. Lord, help me when my brain is on vacation.
I haven't seen Pitch Perfect.
Oh, my God. The two announcers on it, they sit in front of there like, getting ready. That's all I could think of right then.
That's a pretty good thing that we can do.
Yeah.
I don't know if our listeners will want to listen to it.
No. But they're just like getting ready and making silly noises.
That's a good one.
Yeah.